violent protests in India leave at least 10 dead. And would getting paid to do nothing really make you happy?
But if you give them a pretty good salary for doing nothing, they feel terrible.
Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Vivienne Nunes. Good morning. A court in India has halted the expansion of a copper factory a day after at least 11 people were shot dead during protests against the plant. Shares in Vedanta Limited have dropped nearly 6% since the violent clashes in Tamil Nadu state. The BBC's Samir Hashmi is in Mumbai.
The protesters want the plant to shut down. The villagers say that it's a major polluter. It's affected the groundwater. It's led to a lot of diseases, including cancer. And that's why they want the plant to be shut down entirely. On the other hand, the company denies all these charges. And in fact, it has plans to double the capacity. So these protests started about 3 months ago. And on Tuesday, to mark the 100th day of these protests, thousands of people had assembled in this area. Now, what the police says is that some of the protesters started to throw stones on the vehicles and the buildings in the surrounding area, which compelled them to start shooting. Even the local government over there has defended this decision, saying that the police were compelled to take that action.
I understand there's some talk of compensation as well for the families of the victims who were killed.
The local government has announced compensation. They are giving around $15,000 to the families of all those people who were killed. They're also compensating families of those who have been injured. Several people have been injured and are hospitalized right now. But I think the problem for the state government now is that until now, it had really not taken up this issue seriously. That is what the villagers say. But after this incident, they will now have to really relook at this whole issue, whether they need to shut down the plant. Even if they give a go ahead to the plant, they have to make sure that it meets all the environmental norms, which it has been violating, according to even the State Pollution Board.
Samir Hashmi, let's do the numbers. Global share markets fell and oil prices dropped after Donald Trump cast doubt on a planned summit with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Weak manufacturing data and continued uncertainty over the creation of an anti-establishment government in Italy pressured the euro. Meanwhile, the Turkish lira dropped to a new low against the dollar amid fresh concerns about the economy. German Chancellor Angela Merkel will meet with President Xi Jinping this week as she travels to China with a delegation of German business leaders. So, are Donald Trump's trade policies forging new alliances between Beijing and Europe? Jan Weidenfeld is with the Mercator Institute for China Studies in Berlin.
If you look into the details and look below the surface, then there's still fundamental disagreements. I mean, all of the difficulties we've had with China over the past few years, so very aggressive industrial policy on the part of China. None of these issues go away. But yes, of course, we also realize that if we want to maintain at least parts of the current global free trade order, then we need to talk to the Chinese, because they again have an interest in maintaining that order as well, because they want to export goods. I mean, it's an export nation.
And yet the Chinese ambassador to Germany has questioned Mrs. Merkel's commitment to free trade, even going so far as saying China sees a protectionist tendency in Germany. What do you make of that?
Well, I think it's quite a stretch to make that argument, because the European market, including, of course, the German market, is one of the most liberal markets in the world. So we need to do something about, you know, this aggressive outward-facing industrial policy of the Chinese that's very much geared at buying the crown jewels of individual member states in terms of high-tech industry and taking knowledge back to China.
Jan Weidenfeld. Being paid to do nothing at work might sound like every employee's dream, but it can also bring shame and depression. Anthropologist David Graeber at the London School of Economics has written a book on the subject of meaningless jobs. He cites a survey that showed nearly 40% of UK workers were quite sure their job made no significant contribution to the world at all.
A lot of middle management, a lot of people, these sort of minor executive, managerial, supervisory, clerical, administrative sort of jobs, which are exactly the kind of jobs that have been exploding over the last 30, 40 years or so. A lot of people are just given a responsibility which you could do in an hour a week or 2 hours a week. Some of them, on the other hand, are working very hard, but believe that if nobody was doing this, either it would make no difference or the world would be a better place. You know, for example, a lot of people in corporate law feel that way. I had one guy who was a subcontractor to a subcontractor to a subcontractor to the German military, whose basic job was if a a military officer wanted to move his computer from room to room, they had to call people who would call people who would call, and then he'd have to drive 200 kilometers in his car, authorize something, move the computer, and then go away again.
While being paid to do nothing may sound appealing, Mr. Graber says often it just makes people depressed.
One of the things that's really interesting that came up in my research is the degree to which actually people are really miserable. You know, we're taught to think that everybody wants something for nothing, that people are essentially trying to get the most they can out of the world for the least amount of effort. But if you give them a job where they can just collect a pretty good salary for doing nothing, they feel terrible. It has all these depression, anxiety, it has all these psychosomatic effects. People get talk about all these strange illnesses that just disappear the moment they get a real job that has responsibilities. And also people treat each other really badly.
So how can we solve the problem of pointless jobs?
I've become increasingly attracted to the idea of universal basic income. We have this idea that if people had the means to live, they would just sit around and watch TV all day. Well, I don't think that's true at all. I mean, if people were happy to being paid to do nothing, they'd be happy in these pointless jobs. But something like 40% of people are already doing nonsense. You know, how can it be a worse distribution of labor than we already have? And at least they'll be happier doing it.
David Graber. And finally, a royal wedding guest has sold her commemorative gift bag on eBay for nearly $30,000. Press reports say the bag included some shortbread and a discount voucher for the Windsor Castle shop. In London, I'm Vivienne Nunes with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.